President Trump is to impose tariffs on imports from Canada, Mexico and China from tomorrow, and he's threatened to take similar action against the European Union. Court documents show a senior aide to Prince Andrew told an alleged Chinese spy that his interview with Newsnight had been ill-advised. Separate papers show the prince appeared to have been in touch with the sex offender Jeffrey Epstein for longer than he's previously admitted. A British-Israeli woman held hostage in Gaza has said Hamas kept her in buildings belonging to the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees. AstraZeneca has scrapped plans to spend £450 million expanding a vaccine manufacturing plant in Liverpool. Wales have been thrashed by France in the Six Nations opening match. The White House has sparked fresh concern about global trade by announcing that President Trump will press ahead tomorrow with the tariffs he's threatened to impose on America's three biggest trading partners. Imports from Mexico, Canada and China are set to be hit with the additional levies. Asked tonight about the measures, Mr. Trump also said he would absolutely impose tariffs on the European Union. Here's our North America correspondent, David Willis.
President Trump blames Canada, Mexico and China for the flow of illegal drugs and undocumented workers into the United States. Imposing tariffs on their exports, he believes, will make those goods more expensive and thereby less attractive to American consumers and force those countries to the negotiating table. Speaking in the Oval Office, the president said there were several reasons for his decision.
Number one is the people that have poured into our country so horribly and so much. Number two are the drugs, fentanyl and everything else that have come into the country. And number three are the massive subsidies that we're giving to Canada and to Mexico in the form of deficits. And I'll be putting the tariff of 25% on Canada and separately 25% on Mexico.
Certain products such as oil could be exempt from the sanctions. 60% of America's oil comes from Canada, for example, and tariffs could push up petrol prices and increase inflation, something Mr. Trump has vowed to curb. Economists have also warned the loss of jobs and revenue resulting from such tariffs could be enough to plunge Canada and Mexico into recession. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has already promised to retaliate, sparking fears of a trade war. Unperturbed, Mr. Trump told reporters he was also contemplating tariffs on European goods in an attempt to reverse the trade deficit. Donald Trump first threatened to impose tariffs on Mexican imports back in 2019, but didn't follow through. Last weekend, he made a similar declaration in regard to Colombia, only to drop the plan several hours later after the Colombian government agreed to accept military flights containing migrants deported from the US.
An email revealed in a court case appears to show that Prince Andrew was in contact with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein for longer than he has previously admitted. The email was sent in February 2011, 2 months after the Duke says he had broken off contact with Epstein. Court documents from a separate case have provided a further insight into the close relationship between Prince Andrew and an alleged Chinese spy, Yang Tongbo. They show that a senior aide to Prince Andrew privately admitted to Mr. Yang that the Duke's interview with BBC Newsnight in 2019 had been a disaster. Our home and legal correspondent Dominic Casciani reports.
The hundreds of pages of documents disclosed today are an unprecedented insight into how a man banned from the UK as a threat to national security built such a strong bond with Prince Andrew. The Duke met Yang Tenbo in 2014 when he attended a St. James's Palace dinner for Chinese entrepreneurs. He so impressed the prince, he was ultimately asked to develop his Pitch at Palace commercial enterprise in China. The documents later revealed a depth of despair among the prince's advisers in the wake of the November 2019 Newsnight interview. In March 2020, Dominic Hampshire, his senior aide, used Buckingham Palace official notepaper to thank Mr. Yang for his loyalty, while red carpet chasers shunned the prince. His words are voiced by a producer.
We have dealt with the aftermath of a hugely ill-advised and unsuccessful television interview. There's no doubt that despite everything going on around us, we have formed a solid and unbreakable base with all the respective parts in place for an extremely powerful, perhaps unparalleled entity at the highest level possible. This stands us in great stead moving forward. I hope you agree that this would simply have not been possible without the depth of trust, friendship, loyalty and support that we have all built up with each other over these last few months.
7 months later, a second letter from Mr. Hampshire authorised Mr. Yang to act for the prince in a planned investment scheme in China. Mr. Yang has denied working for the Chinese state to influence the prince, and he told the court that Buckingham Palace was aware of the relationship. But these revelations are not the only court papers today to make heavy reading for the embattled prince. During the Newsnight interview, Emily Maitlis asked the Duke to confirm whether he had ended his friendship with sex offender Jeffrey Epstein in 2010.
Was that visit, December of 2010, the only time you saw him after he was convicted?
Yes.
Did you see him or speak to him again?
No, that was that. Never funny enough, 2010 was it. That was it.
But papers from an entirely unrelated case concerning another financier's relationship with Epstein include an email seemingly from the prince. It appears to show he was in contact with Epstein around 2 months later. It read, "Keep in close touch, and we'll play some more soon."
Our royal correspondent Sean Coughlin examines what the latest disclosures could mean for the Duke.
This has been another bad day for Prince Andrew. With some spectacular understatement, his close aide was revealed as telling an alleged Chinese spy that Prince Andrew's appearance on Newsnight in 2019 had been unsuccessful. That could sum up much of the following years, as he's become an increasingly isolated figure, no longer a working royal. The king, his brother, has cut him off financially, and there has been such pressure on him to move out of his Windsor mansion that it's been called the Siege of Royal Lodge. The latest claims about his links to Jeffrey Epstein and his Chinese business connections will add to questions about his judgment. Buckingham Palace will once again be alarmed by details, such as the claim made to the alleged spy that they had found a way to get the relevant people unnoticed in and out of the house in Windsor. There was a ray of good news this week for Prince Andrew, with the birth of his granddaughter. She's been given the name Athena, the name of the Greek goddess of wisdom. It's something that the rest of the royal family might want to see more of.
Officials investigating the mid-air collision that killed 67 people in Washington on Wednesday have insisted they will analyse every fact to determine the cause of the crash. President Trump has said the military helicopter involved in the incident was flying too high, but didn't provide any evidence to support his claim. Investigators are examining the flight data recorders from the passenger plane that collided with the helicopter and are expected to publish their initial findings within 30 days. Our correspondent, Neda Taufik, is following the recovery efforts in Washington.
Under the grey and rainy skies of the nation's capital, the difficult recovery resumes. Crews and divers are back in the water attempting to salvage the wreckage, which lies in pieces. Bodies continue to be recovered from the site of the U.S.'s deadliest air disaster in two decades as families search for closure and answers. Vital to that could be the so-called black boxes that were pulled from the commercial jet that crashed after colliding with an Army Black Hawk helicopter. The National Transportation Safety Board will take days to study the cockpit voice and flight data recordings to help determine the cause of the crash. Already, though, gaps and potential mistakes are being raised. The Army has said the three-member crew of soldiers on the Black Hawk were experienced, but the investigation is looking into whether the helicopter followed the approved route. President Donald Trump on social media said the helicopter was flying too high, far above the 200-foot limit that they are capped at for safety reasons. But his Secretary of Defense has said that is just speculation for now. Also, reportedly, the air traffic controller on duty that night was doing the job of two people because of understaffing. The National Transportation Safety Board member here on the scene, Todd Inham, said all of that is a concern if confirmed by the investigation.
Aviation safety is built upon a complex series of systems. We call it a Swiss cheese effect, where there's multiple different layers where if one thing fails, the next should pick up. What we need to do is reduce any failure.
The NTSB says it could take a year to know the potential cause of the crash, but that preliminary findings will be out in 30 days. Along with the investigation, they are trying to support the bereaved families, nearly 100 who are in the vicinity awaiting updates.
Further details have emerged about some of those killed in the crash. Our correspondent John Sudworth has been talking to athletes at the Skating Club of Boston, which has links to six of the victims.
Inside the club entrance, the photographs of two promising young athletes captured in motion on the ice. are surrounded by tributes and flowers. 13-year-old Gina Han with her arms outstretched and 16-year-old Spencer Lane, a look of deep concentration on his face.
They were so committed to everything they were doing.
Just a few days ago, Alisa Efimova and Misha Mitrovanov won the US pairs title at the National Figure Skating Championships in Wichita, Kansas. That's where they last saw their two friends who, having stayed on for more elite-level training, were on that fateful flight to Washington, accompanied by their mothers, Christine Lane and Jin Han.
They were just two sunshines that you get the energy from as soon as you see them. I would walk into this ice rink and I would see them in the morning tying their skates, saying hello, seeing their faces lit up.
Spencer was a firecracker, the best way to put it. He started skating fairly later than other skaters, but because of his amazing talent, he progressed so quickly.
Also on the flight were two of the club's star coaches, Vadim Nomov and Jenya Shishkova, originally from Russia and the 1994 World Pairs Skating Champions, who leave a 23-year-old son, Max, another hugely promising talent from Boston, who finished fourth in the men's competition in Wichita on Sunday. In its more than 100 years of history, the club has produced two Olympic champions and scores of US champions and has known tragedy before. It was home to around half of the members of the US skating team killed in a plane crash on their way to the 1961 World Championships in Prague.
Mr. Trump's assertion that the helicopter was flying too high is the second time he's commented on the collision without providing evidence to support his claims. Jay Corton from BBC Verify has been assessing the president's previous remarks.
Yesterday, President Trump suggested diversity policies could be responsible for the crash in Washington. He said the Obama administration issued a diversity directive because officials thought the government agency in charge of civil aviation was too white. He claimed that as a result, the Federal Aviation Administration had focused on hiring people with severe intellectual and psychiatric disabilities, adding they can be air traffic controllers. BBC Verify has looked into the president's claim. In 2013, President Obama introduced a diversity and inclusion program for the FAA, which opened up the hiring process to people with a range of disabilities. But the FAA says any candidate seeking to become an air traffic controller has to go through at least 2 years of training, as well as screening for psychological issues throughout the recruitment process. Although the aviation agency has become more diverse since Mr. Obama's policy was introduced, there is no evidence yet that this had any impact on Wednesday's crash. The policy remained in place during President Trump's first term in office, as well as under President Biden.
A British-Israeli woman who was among the first hostages in Gaza to be released under the ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel says she was held by her captors in UN facilities. In a phone call with Sir Keir Starmer, Emily Damari also revealed she was refused access to medical treatment. Our correspondent, Wira Davis, reports from Jerusalem.
When Emily Damari was abducted by Hamas gunmen, she was shot in the hand and leg, eventually losing two fingers. Today, her family said she'd spoken to Sir Keir Starmer and told him she was held in Gaza in facilities belonging to the UN body UNRWA and that she'd been denied access to proper medical treatment. She said an out-of-date bottle of iodine was all that was provided. Israel has repeatedly accused UNRWA personnel of being involved in the October the 7th attacks and claimed that its buildings in Gaza were used by Hamas. Juliet Toomer, who's the Director of Communications at UNRWA, told PM here on Radio 4 that she wanted an independent investigation into the allegations that the agency's facilities had been used for military purposes. She said that abandoned UN buildings had also been used by thousands of Palestinians seeking shelter from the fighting.
For many, many months, we did not have access to several of our facilities. So the vast majority of our buildings were turned into shelter when the war started. They were turned into UNRWA shelters. At some point, we had 1 million people in those shelters.
The ceasefire deal under which Ms. Damari was released is fragile but still holding, despite the chaotic scenes when hostages were handed over in Gaza yesterday. Another three hostages will be released tomorrow. They include 34-year-old Yarden Bibas, whose wife and two infant children were said by Hamas to have been killed in an Israeli airstrike while in captivity. Israel has repeatedly said that Hamas is responsible for the safety of all the hostages. Meanwhile, as an indication of further progress, the Rafah border crossing between Egypt and Gaza is due to partially reopen tomorrow, allowing more urgently needed aid in and the transfer out of a limited number of injured or wounded people for treatment abroad.
The United Nations says at least 700 people have been killed since Sunday in fighting in the Democratic Republic of Congo. 3,000 other people have been wounded as the M23 rebel group, which is backed by Rwanda, battles to take control of Goma in the east of the country. The Southern African Development Community, which represents 16 African nations, met in Harare during the day for a special summit on the crisis. Our correspondent there, Shingai Nyoka, says the conflict looks like it will continue to escalate.
Both sides are ramping up the war rhetoric. The M23 rebels are moving south after they overran Goma. They're moving to Bukavu, which has a very strategic military airport, and they vowed to march all the way to Kinshasa. While the government, the Congolese government, says that the defense forces have pushed back the rebel offensive, and they've also started to enlist new civilians. Hundreds are signing up, and they say that they are ready to die to repel these rebels. And so even though I think a lot of people around the world want to see peace, this conflict is going in the opposite direction.
One of the UK's biggest pharmaceutical companies, AstraZeneca, has scrapped plans to spend £450 million expanding a vaccine manufacturing plant in Liverpool. The firm said a reduction in government support was one of the reasons behind the decision. Here's our business correspondent, Mark Ashdown.
On Wednesday, Rachel Reeves highlighted life sciences as a crucial component in her plan to kickstart economic growth. Now, one of the world's leading pharmaceutical players has ditched plans to massively expand its flu vaccine centre in Liverpool. AstraZeneca said several factors had influenced the decision, including the timing and reduction of the final offer from the Treasury compared to the previous government's proposal. Officials say a change in the makeup of the investment originally proposed led to a reduced grant offer being put forward, but that the government is committed to creating a thriving life sciences sector. The Conservatives said there was no vaccine for incompetence and claimed that this was another sign of how unattractive the UK had become to investors.
The German Parliament has stepped back from relying on the far right to pass legislation for the first time since the Second World War. Many voters in Germany had expressed concern that tougher immigration rules would become law with the support of the far-right AfD party, breaching a long-standing political convention that centrists should not cooperate with extremists. But the plans were narrowly defeated. Our correspondent, Damien McGuinness, reports from Berlin.
This was an unusually ferocious debate. Tempers were frayed and emotions were high. That's because for many politicians here, doing any sort of deal with the far right undermines modern German democracy. The gates to hell, as one left-wing politician put it during an impassioned speech. But Conservative leader Friedrich Merz argues that acting tough on migration is the only way to lure back voters from the AfD. Losing this vote is a blow to his election campaign, but he says at least now voters know what they're getting.
I would have liked to have seen a different result, but this result certainly gives us clarity. It shows where we stand, and it shows where the Social Democrats and the Greens stand.
This looks set to be a fiercely fought campaign, and German politics is suddenly more polarised than it's been for years. The question for Friedrich Merz, who according to current polls could become Germany's next chancellor, is whether his risky, hard-line strategy over migration undermines the AfD or boosts its support.
A government forecast says around 9% of farmland in England may need to be converted into forest and wild habitats by 2050 to meet net zero and environmental targets. The figure is part of a consultation about how land should be managed to balance food production, nature and environmental goals. The Environment Secretary, Steve Reed, says the government won't tell anyone what to do with their land, but help them make better decisions. Malcolm Pryor reports.
A land use framework may sound like a dry and dusty policy document, but it's a blueprint that will set out how England's landscape will evolve over the next 25 years. Today, 67% of the country is agricultural, 15% urban, and just 0.2% used by utilities like solar and wind farms, power stations and waterworks. But the government says that needs to change if we're to hit our environment targets, and 9% of England's farmland needs to be converted into forests and animal habitats. Conservative leader Kemi Badenoch says the government's plan is just going to stoke more anger among already struggling farmers.
To add even more burdens, saying that we're going to spend more time on net zero, shows that they are not serious. We need to talk about food security and food production and making life easier for farmers, not harder.
But the government insists greater efficiencies on the remaining land should maintain UK food production at current levels. Henry Dimbleby, co-founder of Food Chain Leon, published the Independent National Food Strategy 4 years ago. He says many farmers will agree that the least productive land can meet other needs.
You'll see a lot of farmers not coming out against this, but looking at the water in their fields, looking at the biodiversity collapse, the decline in pollinators. I think you might see this as the beginning of a rapprochement between farmers and government.
The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs said the proposed land use framework would guarantee long-term food security, and future-proof farm businesses support new house building and energy infrastructure while reducing conflicts that hold up development.
A woman's body has been recovered from the River Dee in Aberdeen, where searches have been taking place for two missing sisters. Henrietta and Eliza Hushti were last seen more than 3 weeks ago. Phil McDonald reports from Aberdeen.
The body was spotted in the water east of Aberdeen Boat Club just before 8 o'clock this morning, less than half a mile from where the sisters were last seen. Formal identification is yet to take place, but the family of Henrietta Hushti has been informed. The sisters, both aged 32 and part of a set of triplets, were born in Hungary and had been living in Scotland for about 10 years. Audrey Nicol is the local MSP.
This is something that we were all dreading, but I think given the circumstances of a couple of weeks ago, perhaps we thought might be inevitable. There is a real sense of sadness, of shock, and I think of heartbreak for the family.
Police Scotland has said there don't appear to be any suspicious circumstances, but inquiries are ongoing. The investigation continues with police divers and specialist officers carrying out further searches of the River Dee.
A gunman who opened fire on a crowd standing outside a wake in Birmingham has been jailed for life and told he'll serve a minimum of 24 years. Meshack Berryman injured three men in the shooting, which took place in 2023 after the funeral of a teenager. Police said the victims were alive only through sheer luck. Our Midlands correspondent Phil Mackey reports.
Several CCTV cameras filmed the attack in February 2023. Four gunshots were fired from a car into the crowd outside a church hall. Three people were hit and more were injured in the crush as people fled. The most seriously hurt was hit in the chest and suffered from fractured ribs and internal bleeding. All are still suffering the physical and mental effects of the attack. Meshack Berryman was a drug dealer and a member of a street gang. He targeted the funeral because he knew members of a rival group would be there. Two of his three victims were affiliated to it. Police believe he used a blank firing pistol, which had been modified to use live rounds. It hasn't been recovered. Sentencing him at Birmingham Crown Court, Judge Melbourne Inman said it had been another case of gang violence that had become a scourge of the city and that Berryman remained a very grave danger to the public.
A campaigner is calling on the government to block the provision of cross-sex hormones to under-18s. Kira Bell was one of those given the therapy, which is used to help people transition to a different gender from the one they were born into. She later regretted her decision to transition to male as a teenager. Our health editor Hugh Pym reports.
A landmark review last year by Dr. Hilary Cass concluded that there was remarkably weak evidence for the use of puberty blockers. The NHS stopped their routine prescription for under-18s and they were subsequently banned from being supplied privately. But that ban did not extend to cross-sex hormones. And now lawyers acting for three people have written to the Department of Health covering England, threatening legal action if a ban is not implemented. One of them is Kira Bell, who 5 years ago went to court to challenge the NHS clinic where she started her treatment. She now says the use of cross-sex hormones for young people must be stopped.
It changes not only your physical and mental state, but also your social state, especially for females who are taking testosterone. I'm one of those people, and my whole life has kind of been flipped upside down, and there's no way back.
The CAST review said an extremely cautious approach should be taken with hormone treatment for under-18s. NHS England said an independently chaired team would review all referrals for cross-sex hormones for young people. The Department of Health said there was an ongoing review of the use of drugs for gender-affirming therapies.
Norway has seized a ship on suspicion of involvement in sabotaging a fibre-optic cable in the Baltic Sea last week. The vessel is Norwegian-owned but said to be crewed entirely by Russians. Western officials suspect Russia has been targeting undersea cables and pipelines, something Moscow denies. Barclays has said it's experiencing IT problems affecting its app, online banking and payments in and out of accounts. The bank is also unable to provide assistance on the phone or its Messenger service. The outage has struck on what is payday for many customers in the UK, as well as the deadline for self-assessment tax returns. The bank apologised for the problems and said it was working hard to fix the issue. A whale that became entangled in rope off the Isle of Skye has been freed by rescuers. A member of the public spotted the animal trapped at a fish farm and raised the alarm. Our Scotland correspondent Laura Gordon has the details.
Specialist rescuers used underwater cameras and a drone to work out how to free the humpback, which was around 9 metres in length. Two ropes wrapped around the animal's head and one of its fins had become tightly entangled on a chain attached to a mooring buoy, leaving it unable to swim freely. Martin Boone from British Divers Marine Life Rescue said rescuing whales could be tricky and fraught with danger.
From the surface, it looked like it was just going to be a one-cut rescue. However, when we looked at the underwater footage, the animal was extremely entangled right under its chin and around its head and onto its left pectoral fin. What we don't want to do is cut the wrong rope and then have the animal free swimming but still entangled.
Specialist knives attached to poles were used to cut the ropes in a set sequence to avoid freeing the whale with some still attached. It's possible the ropes had come from drifting marine debris. They weren't of the type used in a nearby fish farm, which suspended operations while the rescue was underway. After remaining motionless for around 20 minutes after being freed, the exhausted whale moved away. Rescuers said it was last seen swimming strongly, moving at speed, and heading back out into more open water.
Now for a look at the morning papers. The Financial Times leads on AstraZeneca's decision to scrap plans for a new manufacturing plant in Liverpool, calling it a blow to the government's growth agenda. The paper says executives have warned that policies pursued by the government will make the UK a less attractive place to invest. The Times says AstraZeneca asked for assurances about the plant as soon as Labour took office, but did not get a result for months. The Daily Mail says Prince Andrew faces fresh pressure after an email emerged undermining his claims about when he broke contact with Jeffrey Epstein. It calls the revelations a bombshell. The Sun speaks of a humiliation and says a portrait of the Duke of York has also now been removed from a London pub which bears his name. The front page of the Daily Telegraph says Donald Trump has kicked off a trade war with China by announcing tariffs. The paper says the UK's trade with the US is mostly in services, so would not be affected if the president also imposed tariffs on Europe. But it warns that Britain's tax on tech giants may yet draw the ire of Mr. Trump. Manchester City have been drawn against the holders Real Madrid in the Champions League playoff round. Celtic face Bayern Munich, with both British sides playing their first leg at home. Liverpool, Arsenal and Aston Villa are already through to the last 16 after finishing in the top eight of the league phase. Rugby Union and Wales have been thrashed by France in the opening match of the Six Nations tournament in Paris. The France captain, Antoine Dupont, inspired his team with three assists, including for the first try.
Dupont, he goes on a mazy run. There we go, the crossfield kick on the end of it.
France ran in six more tries to win the match by 43 points to nil. It was Wales's 13th successive test match defeat. The headlines again. President Trump is imposing new trade tariffs on Canada, Mexico and China and has warned that the EU is facing similar levies. An email has come to light suggesting Prince Andrew was in contact with the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein for longer than he previously admitted.
Officials in Washington say they've now recovered the flight data recorders from both the passenger plane and the military helicopter that crashed on Wednesday, killing 67 people. A British-Israeli woman, released under the ceasefire deal between Hamas and Israel, says she was held by her captors at the United Nations facilities in Gaza. The UN says at least 700 people have been killed this week in fighting in the Democratic Republic of Congo. BBC News.
With Jim Lee. And now with a look at the weather forecasts for the next 24, 48 hours and beyond. Good morning, Ben Rich.
Thanks very much indeed, Al. Friday brought the month of January to a close, a month that certainly delivered some turbulent and stormy weather at times, but a month that ended on a reasonably quiet note. The best of the sunshine on Friday was found across the western side of the UK, 7.3 hours of blue sky overhead at St Athan in the Vale of Glamorgan, and at North Dartmoor in Devon, temperatures climbed to 11.6 degrees Celsius. But Fylingdales in North Yorkshire only got to 3.6 Celsius, and in the Channel Islands it was very wet indeed. In the 24 hours up to 6 p.m. on Friday, 52 millimetres of rain fell at St Helier in Jersey. Now, the weekend is getting off to a relatively quiet start as well. Through the early hours of Saturday, most places will be dry. Fair bit of cloud around, though, particularly for parts of East Wales, central and eastern parts of England. Western England, parts of West Wales, seeing more in the way of clear skies, allowing some fog patches to form. A few fog patches across Scotland as well, where the skies remain clear. For Northern Ireland, we will see increasingly cloudy conditions spreading from the west, with a few spots of rain by morning and a strengthening wind. But where we keep clear skies overnight, temperatures will drop to freezing or below, so there will be a frost to start Saturday. Now, across England and Wales on Saturday, many places will see a fair bit of cloud, but some sunshine will develop as well for the eastern coasts of East Anglia and the far southeast. Also, some sunny spells for the southwest of England, Wales, and parts of northern England. Scotland starting the day with some sunny spells, but cloud will thicken from the west with some outbreaks of rain, particularly in the west of Scotland, and the winds will strengthen as well, gusts of 40 to 50 miles per hour across the western Isles. For Northern Ireland, sunshine in short supply, thickening cloud, outbreaks of rain and brisk winds. Temperatures ranging from 6 degrees in northeast Scotland to 10 degrees in western parts of the UK. We look ahead to Sunday, some rain at times out towards the west, but many places will be dry and some will get to see some spells of sunshine.
Ben, thank you so much. Ben Rich with the Late Night Weather Bulletin. And now on Radio 4, our series Shadow War, China and the West, which has been looking at the points of friction between the two, comes to a close. We've heard about cyber attacks, the theft of technology and data, freedom of speech in universities and political interference. Today, Gordon Carrera asks if tension could lead to something more serious.
One's right there, Pack. Like, oh, going to pass in front of
you. Going right in front of us. Okay, he's coming in underneath you.
He was underneath us, and that's when he came and rammed into our...